they end up interfering with the primitive Klingon race, which later on, unbeknownst to them, leads to the Federation versus Klingon Empire War of 2321. Oh, I love that episode.
Just going to give Onyx a call. Let's crack on with the show. I actually recorded that, by the way. It was fucking nice.
Bastard!
Oh, I love that shit.
This is our world now. This is our world of the electron. This is the electron. Beauty of the pod. We explore. And you call us criminals. We seek after knowledge. And you call us criminals. We exist without skin color, without nationality, without religious bias. And you call us criminals. You fill the tomb of bombs. You wage wars. You murder. You can lie to us and try to make us believe it's for our own good. And we're the criminals. Yes, I'm a criminal. My crime is that. Curiosity. My crime is that of judging people by what they say and think, not what they look like. My crime is that of outsmarting you. Something that you will never forgive me for. I am a hacker, and this is my manifesto. You may stop this individual, but you can't stop us all.
Hello, you're listening to Hacker Voice Radio on the 23rd of May 2006. It's a good day, as Sean Kennedy would say. I hope everybody's quite well. We've got suddenly a rearrangement in the Technical Tuesday. The plan was to have our good friend Napalm doing his Napalm-ness way of computer programming, decompiling, and literally pimping himself out for any questions that may come about. Sadly, for some crazy reason, Hello?
The number is not answering.
Oh, it's not answering. Damn you! For some crazy reason, he's not around. Don't know what happened, but what we will do is we'll have the long-delayed Ionix Spectacular for this Tech Tuesday. I've got Planet Lave in the background here, so hopefully me and you won't have to say too much.
Hooray!
And I can just browse 4chan for lovely pornographic entertainment. No, I'm joking. I am actually going to listen.
Hackers better get off of my lawn.
Please leave your message after the tone. When done, hang up or press the pound key.
I guess that's your voicemail. Audio. Okay. Well, let's kind of pad things out a tad before we get
talk
him actually
very slow.
Oh, they're a little fast! Ooh, that hurts.
Yes.
See,
so what's going on in the crazy world of hacking, hacker voice, and so on and so forth before we manage to get through to Ionix and do the technical thing?
Okay.
Any news updates for us?
Well, what we've got is we've got quite a lot of stuff here that is regarding the hack the Hack Mag. I just lost that, you know, that word where you're trying to find that word. But yes, the Hack Mag is going quite well. We've got a number of submissions now. So enough for like 6 pages already, which is fantastic. And cool. It's really good that people are actually now contributing. So I want to see that stuff keep on coming, guys. Just keep on sending that stuff in, because it is really down to you. There is nobody else that's going to be, you know, doing this. Well, obviously me and whoever else, but it is really down to you guys. So, you know, whatever you can bring into the magazine is what's going to be used as the submissions come in. Nothing else, nothing less, nothing more. It is really a community-led hacking magazine. So we had a request.
Thank you.
Oop. We had a request.
The number is not answering.
Yeah, no shit, bitch. We had somebody, I won't name their name yet, doing a kind of book review, which I thought was quite interesting. And I thought, yes, that would be fantastic. Why the hell not? Book reviews would be very cool to stick in to the magazine. And we can have as many as we need, you know, per magazine, so people can then submit more. So I think that's cool, because books are very important for reading and shit. and I think the more we have input from this, the better the magazine will be.
Oh, definitely. Are there any hints on what book it is that's being reviewed?
No. I think it's going to be more than one.
Cool. Because obviously I'd be very interested in a magazine like this if it's reviewing books along a similar kind of subject. Technology books, learning books, anything kind of geeky. Stuff like that. If it's reviewing something off Oprah's book club, then I'd probably be less interested. If it's about
I don't think it's going to be
voyage of a teenage woman who discovers her sexuality and crap like that. Although, actually, now I've said it, that sounds all right.
I think it's going to be, if you're asking what kind of books it will be, I don't know, but I am gonna entertain the fact that it will be something related to the hacking scene, so security, technical, and stuff like that. Books,
fantastic.
I don't know, because the person has stated I haven't read the email properly, I'm being honest, man. You know, I tend to skim through. I get 1,000 emails a day, so it's like I get the gist of it. Yes or no is the correct answer for that.
Sounds pretty sweet.
Yeah. So obviously, if people like that, then we can have a lot more of that to come. All over your face.
Ooh.
God, it's really hot in here, or is it just me? I think I just had a cup of tea, and that's really heating me up now.
Good.
Good?
Yes. Tea is good.
Yes. So let's see if we can't call our good friend. I'm here, ready to go. Call me on the cell, yo. That was Ionix forcing me to call him again. No, bitch, I won't call you now. Go away. Ha. Huh. Let's see if we can't call him now.
Hello.
Hello.
There we go. How goes it?
It goes very well. sorry to have to call you up like this on a slightly short notice, but
no, it's quite all right.
You were ready to do the Tech Tuesday anyway, and then we kind of went, oh, actually, no. But here's your chance, dude. You know, sorry you had to be the kind of the second.
Oh, it's all right. I'm trying to bring Asterisk online right now. I'm having some problems with it recognizing my recognizing the internet card.
Oh, fantastic.
But aside from that, it's all right.
Cool. So are you ready?
But I can go into the presentation.
Ah, that's good to hear then.
Okay.
Okay, well, in your own time, I guess, take it away.
All right, well, today we're going to be talking about VoIP, Voice over IP technology. It's a new technology which, in my opinion, is the perfect amalgamation between phreaking and hacking. Voice over IP is basically computer-controlled IP traffic that interfaces with the PSTN network, which is our standard telephone networks. It kind of cracks the field of telephony wide open. Now, one of the things about it is you definitely, you don't need a computer. You don't need anything really except a standard telephone and an adapter and obviously a high-speed internet connection. Right now, there are basically two formats that become popular. One is likely to become the standard, and the other one is just, like, so cool that it can't be ignored. The first is SIP, Session Initiation Protocol, which traditionally is trafficked over port 5060 for signaling and reserves a range of about somewhere between 5 and 10,000 RTP addresses to be able to handle incoming and outgoing. Now, Session Initiation Protocol is an interesting little protocol, as it allows for an extended variety of codecs, which I'll get into later, as well as a really standard interface system so that many different SIP technologies can talk to one another. It allows for things like direct address dialing. You can actually dial from SIP phones what looks like an email address, but it's a SIP address. It's the username at, and then the SIP server, duck, whatever. The next one that I'd like to talk about is the Inter-Asterisk Exchange Protocol, which was developed by Digium in conjunction with Asterisk, and it is a native language for Asterisk to speak, which allows Asterisk, well, one of the things that it's exceedingly good at is transversing firewall, which can be a big problem when debugging these sort of things, because you end up with things like one-way conversation where you can't hear both sides, and things along those lines. Another to the Inter-Asterisk Exchange Protocol is it makes it very easy to set the caller ID so long as your provider allows you to. And I'll get into that when I get into the CID spoofing section. It's important to note that this is something that I recently found out, is that it is actually possible to spoof caller ID or be able to set your outgoing caller ID with the Session Initiation Protocol, the SIP, if your provider allows it. And for like Asterisk, it would be in your configuration files under send RPID equals yes, which allows you to actually do that. The largest advantage of voice over IP right now for your average consumer is the cost. It is very inexpensive to be able to get free, unlimited outgoing calling for residential platforms. Advantages for business include things like being able to track things from call centers without expensive ISDN technology or a private rate interchange, or PRI. Right now, an outgoing plan is, if you shop around for them, you can get them for around $20, at least in the States. I'm not sure exactly what the voice over IP market's looking like for the UK, but it's fairly similar. Now I'd like to move on to Free World Dial-Up. For our listeners out there who don't know, Free World Dial-Up is a service that's been provided by Pulver Communications, whose goal is basically to allow for interconnected calling throughout the world for free. It's a platform much like Skype, but unlike Skype, it doesn't use proprietary codecs or encryption, it uses a simple session initiation protocol, which makes it able to connect to things like Asterisk, and you can use whatever soft phone you'd like to be able to connect to the FreeWorld dial-up servers. Now, FreeWorld dial-up also offers, if you enable it on your account, inter-Asterisk exchange protocol to be able to hook into an Asterisk PBX, which I'll get into later. Right now, the inter-Asterisk exchange protocol for FreeWorld dial-up is down, but it went down sometime last night. I'm hoping it'll be back up soon because half of my DIDs are tied to it. Now, DID is a direct inward dial. Basically, it's a standard phone number that has been assigned through a SIP gateway to communicate with a computer. A standard DID, they come in really two varieties, with some sub-varieties in there. The first variety is an incoming-only line. This is something that you can find through, like, IP Call, or I believe it's Call UK, and they will assign you a standard phone number, which then will interface with a computer and send all calls from that inward phone number to your FreeWorld dial-up account, which could then be hooked into a PBX and allow for things. FreeWorld dial-up allows you to dial toll-free numbers in the UK, in the US, Norway, and Germany with some plans to open up Japanese toll-free calling. So for a freak, that allows for toll-free exchange scanning internationally without international calling rates applying, which is a damn cool thing. If you can check out our interesting numbers post in the forums, a lot of those direct outbound dialing to other countries through UK toll number toll-free numbers were actually found by scanning UK toll-free exchanges. Another thing that FreeWorld dial-up allows you to do is it allows you to call other voice-over IP customers for free, not just within FreeWorld dial-up. If you go onto their site, there's a list of peering where there's something along the lines of about 50 different voice-over IP companies that you can directly call from FreeWorld dial-up, which is another neat feature. So FreeWorld dial-up's the bomb. You should probably get it. It beats the hell out of Skype, and it uses far less system resources. It's available for Windows, Macintosh, and Linux through whatever SIP software they use. They also offer for Windows and Mac, I believe, or I think it's actually just Windows, the FreeWorld dial-up communicator. I just downloaded last night. I was playing around with it. One of the interesting things is session initiation protocol does not necessarily pigeonhole itself into just voice communication. You can also do video over voice over IP and things along those lines. So using like a communicator software, you can build yourself a video phone, out of any Windows computer. I thought it was pretty interesting. Any questions?
What's a computer?
A computer is an interface device that's used for mathematical and logical computations to be able to facilitate extremely difficult mathematical processes in a very short period of time. Such uses for the computer include database spreadsheeting, word processing, internet communications, and TCP/IP traffic of all kinds.
You forgot the main one, man.
Pornographic
entertainment.
I'm sorry, let me revise that. The computer was something that was brought about in the late 70s so that people could watch ASCII porn. It's become a multimedia pornography viewing device. The only thing that I haven't seen so far is a good keyboard and monitor guard.
Thank you for that adaptation. It's much more correct. I guess you ran through that very, very quickly. I didn't think you'd...
That's just the beginning. I'm just pausing to see if there's any questions.
Oh, okay. Any questions from IRC? Let's give them
a... Well, I mean, they're on a delay.
Yeah, they're on a delay. So
no,
they would have gotten the IMI. I don't know. I guess you have to elaborate that some voice over IP providers don't allow binding to inward dials, like proprietary providers like Skype and so on?
Many of your voice over IP companies will assign you a direct inward dial when you sign up for service with them. That's pretty much standard fare.
Yeah.
When I'm moving in, I'm going to move into the Astris PBX system now, and one of the things that I want to explain is that you do not necessarily need to have any kind of pay-for provider to be able to have direct inward dials, real telephone numbers that interface with your computer. What you do need is you do need to be able to be able to make outgoing calls, unless you want to use Skype out for all of that. You do need a voice over IP provider. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, the way that Skype is developed is it's a peer-to-peer network that handles voice over IP traffic. It's a proprietary codec, which they have copyrighted and will not release the source for. It is a closed-source program. It basically uses a variation of the Nutilla network to distribute the power and the bandwidth of the voice conversations amongst all of the users. Now, the way that that works, it basically it works on a peering hub and leaf program where the users with the most amount of bandwidth while they're running the thing use their bandwidth to facilitate the traffic of many different calls. Now, the advantage to this, I suppose, is that it makes calls virtually untraceable, being that it passes through a whole bunch of different Skype, you know, along the way. Most likely, the Skype users that are nearest to you are going to be the ones that have the most bandwidth in relative to where you are, and you'll be using those. Unfortunately, it will not let you interface with the Astris PBX system, which I'm going to move into now. Astris PBX was a PBX system designed by Digium and Mark Spencer to be able to have full exchange capabilities over a multitude of different platforms. If you go to digium.com, you'll notice that they have a lot of PCI cards that you can slap into your computer that will actually allow you FXOs and FXSs, which are basically inward and outward telephone lines, so that you can use your standard telephone system with an Astris PBX with no problems. They also offer things like P1 connections, ISDN connections, and things along those lines, as well as a wonderful invention, which is a ZT dummy modular driver, which allows you to simulate a Zaptel interface, which is what these Digium cards are called, without actually having any of this proprietary hardware. Now, what that will allow you to do is, though you won't be able to plug in a telephone directly into your computer through a modem, because the modems typically are WIN modems, and this is Linux software. Also, you need a full duplexing modem, and I'm not exactly sure the specs on a serial modem to get that to work with the Zaptel drivers, but it's not pretty. But what it will allow you to do is take voice over IP communication and basically have it be completely Ethernet-driven. Now, this will allow you to connect to your Astris server using a soft phone on a computer, an IP telephone like Cisco's phones, or you can actually buy an ATA, an analog digital adapter, which allows you to plug in any standard telephone to an Ethernet card. Oftentimes when you sign up with a voice over IP provider, they'll give you one, but chances are they've locked it into their service and won't let you play in, which I'll be going into later, a couple methods for unlocking certain types of adapters. Now, anyhow, this Astris PBX is a very small platform Linux program, which is scalable for large businesses. It's completely scalable. You can use it for 2 extensions or 1,000, and so long as you have the processing power, fine. Its base install recommendations are 128 megs of RAM, 400 megahertz Pentium 3 processor. It'll run on very, very light hardware. Install. There's a couple ways to go about it. What I did right now is I'm running CentOS, which is a Red Hat-based system, actually Fedora Core, which I'm not thrilled with, but the RPM package management system for the dependencies for Astris are pretty solid, and it makes it a lot easier than like compiling straight from Slackware and to hammer out all the dependencies. Plus, I'm not terribly familiar with Slackware's update software and their, you know, that sort of things. unless you're planning on building everything from source, which you can entirely do. I mean, I don't recommend against it per se, but the asterisk itself is such a pain in the ass to configure that, you know, you might want to just get to the chase and start learning that. But once you get it on there, it's interesting. There's probably about between 50 different configuration files that all interact with one another to tell Asterisk what to do. Your main ones are your iax.conf, which is your configuration file for registration with Inter-Asterisk Exchange Protocol servers, and your sip.conf, who is the same thing but for your sip, and your extensions.conf, which is a dial plan. Now, the extensions.conf has its own markup language, basically, for the entire thing. And it allows for great flexibility within a dial plan. There isn't anything that can be done on a telephone that can't be done on Asterisk, per se. For instance, some of my dial plans, the special little features that I have, is that on my cell phone, if I call my own number, it automatically recognizes the caller ID on my cell phone and passes it to a special option, which then asks me to authenticate with a 7-digit password, at which point it pipes me through to a dial tone. Now, getting beyond the fact that it's very, very rare that you'll ever hear a dial tone on a cell phone, it also, that dial tone is the dial tone for my Asterisk PBX as an internal extension, which gives me the ability to dial any of my internal extensions directly, as well as to be able to use any of my outward-bound dial capabilities straight from that dial tone. An advantage of this, you know, I like to do international calling. I like to call payphones in odd places. I call around the world with my brother in New Zealand right now. I'm obviously, you know, calling the UK on occasion, and I've had no reason to call France a few times. And if I want to do that on my cell phone, it's going to get... It's going to get really expensive really, really quick. But if I call into my number, which, you know, is covered by my my anytime plan, I get a dial tone, at which point I can use my voice over IP to dial nationally on my cell phone for simply the cost of the airtime to call myself, which is a really neat feature. Some of the other features which I've hooked up is text-to-speech software, to allow for in-text files. There's some Perl files which will actually pull up weather reports and things like that, parse the tables in a text-readable format, and then give me text-to-speech capabilities. For instance, if I hit 611 on my phone. In the 1950s and 60s, there was a service that was set up that if you dialed 611, it would give you basically a talking weather report. You entered, you know, the zip code that you wanted the weather report for, and it would read it off to you. This is kind of a throwback to that. Another thing that I've set up is an automated name and number announcement circuit, which will parse the caller ID into a text-readable format and then read back to the caller the caller ID that they're calling from and the name associated with that line as my server sees it. An interesting use of that is the ability to test what caller ID is being passed from whatever, like if you divert through an operator or you're working around with trying to spoof your caller ID or CPN, you can call back into yourself and see how you would recognize it. Another thing that I did is I set up free world dial-up to be able to call anytime any of my extensions call a toll-free number. I did that because my main outgoing provider doesn't allow calls to some toll-free numbers. For instance, Strom Carlson set up the 1-877-TADA-LOL ANAC, which is an amazing little ANAC. It reads your CPN, and it also reads your ANI identification information digits, which is like, I mean, that's a holy grail right there. So once you get it set up, you basically want to set up extensions, you know, test your extensions internally, and then start to work with your sip.conf or your axie.conf to be able to interface with your voice over IP. There are dial plans which will allow you tell you what the format of the outgoing number is going to be, and also what outgoing numbers can and can't be called from an extension. For instance, on my dial plan, I've cut off all access to 900 numbers, as I have no need to ever call them, and you never know who's going to pick up your phone. I also have it set up so that there's dialing codes. For instance, if I hit *33, and then I dial 2 10-digit numbers. The first 10-digit number is the 10-digit number of the party that I want to call. The second 10-digit number is the 10-digit number that I want it to appear like I'm calling from, which, moving right along, is caller ID spoof. Now, caller ID spoofing is kind of a dirty term for setting the caller ID field and going call. This is kind of that PRI lines, private rate interface lines, have been able to do for a very long time. For instance, if somebody from customer service at American Express is going to dial from their desk to a customer, when they get rung, it doesn't show the caller ID of the person that rang them or the internal extension or necessarily the caller ID of where they're calling from, but rather shows the caller ID of their national 800 number, their main number. There's a very simple use for this. For a freak, it's interesting because Asterisk, as a full-featured PBX, allows you to change your caller ID without necessarily having an ISDN line or a PRI. It has a library module, which is called libPRI, which will simulate this. Now, you have to have the right provider to be able to do this. As far as Inter-Asterisk providers go, VoIPJet is a very good one, very cheap for spoofing caller ID. I use VoIPJet, or used to use VoIPJet, to do back spoofing. Now, back spoofing is when you call another, you call yourself, and it pipes you. It doesn't, you don't even have to answer it. It's never supervised. But basically, what you do is you pipe yourself with a spoof caller ID, and you pull the CNAN information, which is the caller name. It's basically the name associated, name and associated with the phone line. It's a standard caller ID feature. But since you never answered the phone, you just pulled up the name and phone number, name and address associated with the phone number, without ever supervising the call. It means you've got the information for free and you never billed for it. There's a couple other, there's a few Inter-Asterisk exchange providers that allow you to set your outbound caller ID. Most of them, from my experience, have been ones that don't offer, like, unlimited plans, incoming or outgoing, that sort of thing. There's charge per minute for incoming and per minute for outgoing. Come on. Another recent find of mine, and I'm actually using this right now, is a company called Telesip. Now, Telesip is the only SIP provider that I've found that will allow you to set your outbound caller ID. I'm not even sure how they were doing it, how they do it, because I thought that as a part of the protocol that wasn't a standard. But apparently it is. You do have to ask them when you sign up to notify them that you're going to be using Asterisk with it, and you have to notify them that you want to be on their one of their newer servers. The GW server doesn't allow it. The GW2 through GW4s do. And basically in your dial plan, there's a function, set caller ID, and generally, you know, the way that I set it up is I set my call ID spoofing based on a very simple dial plan. It's just *33NNX NNX XXX NNX or NXX NXX XXXX, which is basically two standard 10-digit phone numbers. And then at the end, you parse it in the dial plan to when you're sending the variable for what the caller ID is to be set to. You set it for, you basically delete the first 3 digits, set the caller ID, or you the first, what is it, 13 digits, then set the caller ID the last 10, and then the next one, for your dial plan, you parse the first 3 digits, and then take the next 10 as what's to be dialed. It's two lines on my dial plan. It's put in its own context. One of the interesting parts about the Asterisk server is that it allows you to set up different contexts within your extensions, and unless that context is included in some of your other main contexts, then it's not reachable by any other means except a direct call from another context. If it is included, then you can. Like, for instance, my internal extensions are set up so that any extension that's deemed as internal can ring them. However, any external extension that gets, say, my voice menu or voice prompt menu can't, which is good for things like Adisa, which is the thing that, you know, gives me the dial tone, because you don't necessarily want everybody in the world to have access to your direct outward dialing system, especially when you have international dialing enabled. Let's see. So we covered spoofing, covered asterisk, covered free-world dial-up. Any questions?
I think people want to hear your they want to hear Beagle Watson. I don't know if you're
reading through. Well, they want to say hi to my dog.
Yeah, I don't know if you're reading through IRC at all.
I'm actually outside pacing back and forth on the street.
Okay, that's good.
That's what you think.
And no questions from me. I don't know. It'll take some time for people to hear that in IRC. So
yeah.
So let's see.
Well, I'll just run down a list of the nifty little things that you know you can hook up. I mentioned the talking weather. I mentioned the ANAC. There's an automated wake up call system.
Yeah.
So that you can dial yourself wake up calls. I have. Oh, here's another lovely one. It actually allows for incoming fax support and outgoing modem support.
Yeah.
More dial for carriers, take the modem tones and translate to a TTY terminal, which is if you've ever tried to get a modem working with Linux, it's a great boon, especially when coupled, you know, free outgoing calling.
Yeah. So how many?
Also, incoming fax support. Like, you can fax a line, and what it does is it'll actually convert that fax into a PDF file, and then through Simple Mail Transfer Protocol, send it to your email address.
So how many?
You can do the same with.
Sorry.
Oh no! Go ahead.
So how many concurrent connections can you really have in one conference?
In one conference, it depends on your. It has nothing to do with the server's capabilities, really. It's your bandwidth.
Right. Okay.
I really don't see the footprint for asterisk and the calling conferences is really low as far as system resources.
Right.
One of the things that I do. Oh, this is what I wanted to get into.
Sure.
Codecs. Now, there are a variety of codecs out there that are you can interface with asterisk. The most popular being ULAW, ALAW, and GSM. ULAW is what's known as a lossless codec. It actually will allow you to send DTMF using in-band signaling, which is actually making the sounds to process a DTMF, which for voice over IP is kind of rare. Usually, DTMF is passed through signaling. If you can do that, I don't really recommend it because it kind of becomes a hodgepodge and doesn't always work properly. Usually, you look at your provider and you know, figure out what they use to pass DTMF and you use that. But it also has something called ULAW, which is a completely lossless codec. The thing is, the higher the voice quality of the codec that you're using, the more bandwidth you're going to be consuming. Now, I have all of my internal extensions set up to use ULAW. Simply because with 100, you know, meg per second switched router, there's no reason to worry about internal bandwidth. For external bandwidth, I usually use ULAW because I like the voice quality of it. It's actually what a lot of SS7 switches use, which are digital telephone switches. However, if you're going to be doing a lot of multiple call, like concurrent calls, on a standard connection, like a DSL or a cable modem, you're probably going to bump those calls down to a GSM codec, which is the same codec that our cell phones use to be able to you know, communicate with each other, which is one of the reasons why a lot of the times, if you're on an asterisk PB system, you'll notice it sounds a lot like a cell phone, minus, you know, any signal quality loss because of the antenna. But, yeah, so as far as conferencing goes, it's pretty much it's pretty much up to your bandwidth and the connection that you're using. I found on mine I can usually get about 5 ULAW calls in a conference before it starts getting really jittery. One of the problems that I have had is echo cancellation, but I've hammered it out, and it's not on my end. A lot of the times, the distance in between the two connections over the internet, your simple ping times, are going to affect the way that the signal is sent. Basically, what it ends up doing is the ping time is great enough, you end up sending the same packets out twice because you don't get a response confirmation that the voice conversation got there. And so the longer the ping, the longer the delay between those two sent packets, and the longer the echo, because it's actually hitting server twice. Aside from that, I mean, with more bandwidth, with a T1 line, you can have up to 20 concurrent lossless conversations with no problems whatsoever. It all comes down to the latency.
Yeah, latency. Did you just say latency?
Yep.
Yeah, it is. When you're working with these kind of very real-time protocols, if I can call it that, it is all down to latency. You know, if you've ever noticed, you're playing a I don't know, it's insane. For example, if you're playing a multiplayer game like Counter-Strike or something like that, and you have somebody that's in a shitty 56k modem, their ping time will be so high, and hence their latency will be so large that they'll be lagging all through the game. So it affects people in different ways and in different protocols, but primarily for voice over IP, it tends to fuck the whole thing up generally. So the faster connection,
it's really choppy.
Yeah, it tends to be very choppy, or you get quite a lot of drop packets, and it confuses the whole thing.
That's actually one of the reasons why, like on the Xbox platform and the PlayStation 2, as soon as the connection has been made for whatever game that you're playing online, it starts sending all of the packets as UDP packets and receives them as UDP packets, because it cuts down on the bandwidth and latency a lot by basically not requiring each party in the communication to respond with confirmation that the packet's been received.
Right.
Just one of the things that I've noticed when tearing apart Xbox and PS2 traffic on my network.
Yeah, these kind of things do tend to use UDP more than TCP, because obviously UDP is not a connection-oriented protocol, so you, in effect, half or more than half the transfer required to make a connection.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. I'll have that portion of the site up tonight. Sounds good. All right. Yep. I appreciate it, man. Anyhow, another busy day at the office.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, UDP packets. Future of telephony, that's where I wanted to move into.
Okay.
This, is that every phone company right now is basically trying to get on the voice over IP bandwagon. One of the reasons is, like, for instance, in 1997, when Bell Atlantic at the time, which is now Verizon in the United States, merged with a cell phone company, GTE, to create their wireless platform, which is now Verizon Wireless. Part of the deal with that merger was that when they opened up the phone systems in the United States to competition, both local competition and national competition for long distance, one of the things that they had to do that, to be able to merge and to be able to solidify their cellular networks. But a byproduct of it was it allows, basically the way that the rules are set up right now, a lot of the times they end up selling termination through their networks for less than cost. So they end up losing money on things like voice over IP traffic because voice over IP providers don't have to pay them, you know, the standard rate for termination on their networks, which makes makes voice over IP very profitable because, you know, it's a basic, you know, cost margin. You charge more than it costs you, and it costs you less than the phone company. And the phone company has to take it on their back. But, I mean, they signed the contract. I don't really have much pity for them. But one of the things that Verizon's doing right now to counteract this is they're laying fiber optic cable like crazy. The test market right now for fiber optic is in Syracuse, New York, and the surrounding suburbs. And what they're trying to do is roll out their own voice over IP program to be able to compete. And also, once the fiber's laid, their costs are going to be very minimal. The costs of transferring data over a voice over IP or over a fiber optic network are like negligible, even when compared to copper, which is still very cheap. Also, the bandwidth. So Verizon's trying to move in to the is basically trying to move in to the voice over IP market as well as the cable television market at the same time. What I see happening over the next 5 to 10 years around here is companies like Time Warner Cable and Verizon competing for all-in-one packages like Time Warner now offers. Time Warner offers voice over IP service, cable internet, and digital cable all over the same line. Verizon's going to have a significant leg up in the market if they the connections. I think that their standard residential connection is going to allow for 25 megabit downlink and 15 megabit uplink, which is pretty sick. Their business platforms are going to be able to top out around 9 megs per second down and over 50 megs per second up. That's impossible. Wait. I think it's going to be 75 megs up, 75 megs down, 25 megs up. They have 100 meg capability.
Right.
Technology.
That is very impressive, yeah.
It's going to be sick. With something like that in an Asterisk server,
you'd be flying.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You could have a corporate call center in your living room.
I'm like handling, you know, 50,000 different clients.
Voice connection to the time. Yeah,
over multiple sites.
It's going to get crazy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interesting things that I've been playing around with. One of them is actually a Grease Monkey application for Firefox.
Yeah.
Which basically set up the JavaScript loads into it that you set up to connect to your Asterisk server as a client. What it'll then do is translate all phone numbers that appear on the web, and if you click them, it rings your extension. You pick up the phone, and it rings the phone number that you just clicked on. Any phone number on the internet is a click away to call, which I thought was a really cool idea. The real trick is to be able to make links on the internet that will then call that number and patch it in to whatever number you're connected to or whatever soft phone you're using, which would be like one step further. So really, it's a wide open field. The Asterisk PBX system allows for an incredible amount of flexibility for corporate use, home use, or, I mean, it's like a freaker's wet dream. It really is.
Yeah, it's very flexible, but is there in a way to encrypt the traffic? Let's say you had two corporate sites. Now pushing the call, pushing the two trunks together over a VPN encryption would do the trick, but the latency would be horrible.
It would be awful. Yeah. Actually, there's a much better workaround available for that system. The workaround that I've came up with, which is a little project I'm working on called Defeating NSA Wiretaps, is the Inter-Asterisk Exchange Protocol allows for you to set a field in your IAX.conf, which will allow two Inter-Asterisk Exchange clients to be set up on internal extensions, where you would do something like dial 9 before dialing the extension. What it uses is a DES 128-bit encryption to encrypt the conversation between two internal extensions, at which point anybody that you'd want to talk to, that you want an encrypted connection to, you set up an IAX client for them where they use a soft phone to connect to your server as a client on an internal extension. And then you can see, that's the thing, is you aren't limited by standard PBX functions, where in order to have an extension on the system, it physically has to be plugged into a giant board of, you know, telephone extensions.
Sure.
You the internal extension anywhere in the world that registers itself to your Asterisk server on the basis of IP, and it's an authenticated connection, a fully registered client. A lot of voice over IP servers right now are actually using Asterisk to be able to basically dole out, you know, their voice over IP traffic. They also enter Asterisk Exchange as their main, you know, connection. And basically, you're hooking your Asterisk or your soft phone, depending, into their system as a peering network and using their Asterisk for your connection. Basically, the way that they do this is they get a line that's just, they have a tremendous amount of bandwidth, or they're hooked directly with a T1 into the ISDN telephone line. But yeah, you can encrypt the traffic inter-Asterisk Exchange Protocol through Asterisk. I know that the creator of PGP is working on a fully encrypted voice over IP soft phone right now, which he unveiled a prototype for it, but apparently there's a lot of kinks in the code. As far as being able to encrypt things over SIP, you could write a standalone application to take any signaling and connection over 50/60 and encrypt it. Both ends of the conversation would then have to have the same software. But again, you're really cutting down on your abilities to do things there by basically blowing up the size of the packets that you're sending, or the number, depending on how you chop them up. So, yeah, as of right now, encryption is entirely feasible. It is implemented in the Inter-Asterisk Exchange Protocol, but not through SIP.
Right. So, I know the answer to this question, but how much time does it really take? How much time does it
really
take from scratch
to
set the whole thing up?
Let's see. Right now, I've got from installation of the operating system to fully functional Asterisk server, all the options that I'd want on it, which are kind of extensive, I can do that in about 2.5 hours now.
Right, okay.
I have to kind of put a caveat in there that it took me about 6 months just to figure out how to make the damn thing work.
It's true. It takes a lot of
The learning
time.
Curve for it, like if you go ahead, download it, start to install it, start to play around with it, the learning curve on it is pretty harsh. As I mentioned before, there's a tremendous number of configuration files that interact with one another. And there is a standard format for anything that you're putting in those lines, but understanding exactly how they interact with each other and what you need to do to be able to make them do what you want is a pretty intense learning thing, for lack of a term. It's interesting.
So really, for anyone that really wants to try this out, I'd recommend Asterisk on a live CD.
They make an Asterisk live CD. It's not great. What I suggest doing is picking up a cheap box, you know, something with a Pentium 3 that's got a little bit of RAM, and, you know, maybe a 10 gig hard drive, something along those lines, or more. Doesn't matter. The larger your hard drive, see, the Asterisk runs its own voicemail system internally, which converts all of your voicemails into GSM files, which then can be, through a Linux program called Prox, can be turned into WAV files or MP3s. It stores them on the hard drive. So you at any given point in time, as a system configurator, you have access to all of the voicemails that are saved on your system, and each one is caller IDs and times and things along those lines. Also, it comes with a MySQL database connection, so if you set up a database for it, one of the things that I've done is any incoming call that comes into my system, the caller ID, time, and name associated with the call, as well as the chunk that it came in on, and there's little things that you can do with, like, Bell's Mind lookups and things along those lines to get the provider name and the switch type of who's calling you. That all gets logged into a database for me that I can peruse at my, you know, leisure. Ideally, I've set this up not only for us, but I've also set it up for my home business here. And ideally, I'm going to come up with a web application to parse that data and be able to give me an online customer database for people that have called me,
cool.
Which will allow for different kinds of tracking.
It's also very easy to implement that into a kind of web-based administration tool that actually BinRev use for their call-in features and conferences and sort of thing like that.
Yeah, if somebody just wants to play around with it, I suggest getting a separate box and running Asterisk at Home 2.7.
Yeah.
2.8 just came out. I played around with it quite a bit, but it's pretty buggy. If you're using the Pentium platform, I say go straight with the 2.8. It seems to run very smoothly on it. But right now, my Asterisk server is a AMD 1300 plus Athlon chip with a gig of RAM. And for whatever reason, the i3 or i686 compile of the Asterisk doesn't really play nice with my computer. So for that one, Asterisk 2.7 worked fine. Eventually, I went and did a vanilla install of Debian, and like a server install, and worked my way up from there. And if you're going to do that, you basically, every time you compile it or attempt to compile it, you reach another dependency problem. So then you look at the dependency and you apt-get it.
Just a very quick, because we've got 3 minutes left. Just a quick question from IRC. What do you think of Asterisk at Home and FreePBX?
Asterisk at Home and FreePBX is a very flexible way to set up dial plans and be able to do things like that. I recommend it for beginners. I recommend it for people that are trying to figure it out. One thing that I got to say is that if you are using Asterisk at Home and FreePBX, actually use the config edit function to be able to look at your different configuration, figure out what they're doing. One of the things that Asterisk at Home does not do terribly well is inbound call routing. I've chosen, when I've used it, to set everything up separately. As I was mentioning before about the context and not allowing people to have access to your internal extensions and certain things, like I have speed dial extensions set up as extensions on my system, where, say, I want to call, like you guys, I hit 37 and hit pound, and it automatically places an outgoing call to the UK. Now, I would hate for somebody to have access to my internal extensions, hit 1337 pound, and be able to run up a telephone bill.
Okay.
So, it doesn't do that well, but I say it's a very good way to start. It's got a bigger footprint than like a plain Asterisk install. And it's also an older version of Asterisk, so you don't have all of the options that you would on, like, a CVS head, you know, install.
Cool. Well, we're gonna have to close things off here, sadly. Thanks very much for dropping by. It was fantastic.
No problem, and maybe tomorrow I can have this Asterisk server up and running. It's been a little buggy. I had to reinstall the Ethernet card for it, but maybe tomorrow, some point in the show, give a little demonstration of what the extensions sound like and the ANAC, the talking weather, you know, that sort of thing.
Cool. No problems, man. Thank you very much for stepping in. Again,
My pleasure.
To let people know that they can always email in questions into radio@hackervoice.co.uk. Thank you for listening to another episode of Tech Tuesday, and I'll catch you same time, same place tomorrow.
Excellent.
Good
Take
night.
Care, all. It's been a pleasure. Boring manager, Rob. Rob said code buggy, very diligent, but his output stinks. His code not functional.